All right, boys. You have an option to choose a fruity or a chocolate candy for this fruity. Upcoming road trip. Which one are you picking, and what is it and why?
I usually go fruity on road trip.
Yeah.
Because chocolate gets melty, you know, usually a Starburst or a Skittle situation.
You must not be a driver.
No, my wife drives.
Well, then that's why you can have Starburst, unless you get the minis, which are unwrapped.
I think I'm similar. Like, if it was just, hey, if I was going to a convenience store and like, which one are you getting just to enjoy? I think I'd grab like a Milky Way bar, but
going straight for the candy bar.
Yeah. But fair. If it's a road trip situation, then yeah, I'm probably going for like some kind of sour, fruity candy in some kind of small ball-ish form. I like Sour Spree a lot. Those are pretty good. Or like Shock Tarts. Those are
I'm a fan.
A solid one.
Yeah, I think that's... Let me ask you another question on that before I get to my answer. Are you going into a gas station, whether to pee or fill up your car, whatever you got to do, and just leaving with candy? Or is there like a savory item that comes with the sweet item?
Yeah, usually a bag of chips. When we took a road trip to Nashville, I got some Gardettos this time.
It's pretty good.
Combos.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's usually the first place we stop is Quick Trip, get drinks, snacks, and then have an actual meal once we're like 2-3 hours on the road.
That's fair. I'm typically going to go with sour, or not mm-hmm. sour, but more fruity. Like I like a gummy bear or a gummy worm for the road, mm-hmm. like a very poppable snack. Because Sarah and I, we definitely share the driving, but.
I mean, let me ask you this question. What is a road trip at that point? How long does something have to be before it turns into a road trip?
I would say 3 hours for me. Like that's when I'm getting a snack for that.
Yeah,
but it's also kind of like the movie theater. Like if I go and get dinner or lunch and go see a movie, I'm going to get popcorn. Like I'm just going to do it. Like I used to smoke. I was kind of conditioned to smoke in the car. It was gross. But like now I've got this thing where it's like, hey, you're on a road trip. You need something to
so much nicotine gum.
Yeah, that's it. Just straight nicotine gum.
See, I think for me, because I end up going home and seeing the parents, you know, at least once a month and sometimes more often than that. And that's a 3 hour drive.
Yeah,
Or it's like 3 hours and 15 minutes. Like I do that drive all the time to the point that does not feel like a road trip to me. If it was
that's fair.
If it was 4 or 5 hours and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a road trip. But like that is I'll stop for gas once and I'll hit up like a McDonald's or something and either get an actual sandwich or just an iced tea or something as I'm going. But like that's fair. I don't have like a traditional because I take that drive so often. I don't feel like that's a road trip to the point of like, ooh, I got to get my snacks for this one.
That makes sense. Yeah. What doesn't make sense is this show. We are the Casual Hour. I am Bobby. Not. Chase is here. Chase, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Bobby?
I'm good, man. And Johnny?
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Thank you.
That's great. tonight is a deep dive, and yours truly is going to be taking you two on a journey. You don't know what we're talking about tonight. You have nothing. I've given you nothing for tonight. And for anybody who is watching us for the first time,
like what Johnny gives us every podcast.
Yeah, I decided that I'm giving you the Johnny. We are doing this tonight, a deep dive. We do a few shows here. Our traditional one is called What You've Been Playing. We bring games that we're playing and we tell you about the news around them. We do a monthly preview where we talk about all the games that we are excited for. And we also look back to the prior month and say, did we get it right? And assuredly, no. But we also do a deep dive, and that is Dealer's Choice, where one of us puts together something more that we're into that we want to talk to you two about. Sometimes it's us reviewing a magazine. It's show and tell into one of Chase's collectibles. It's a deep dive love letter to Bungie. Whatever whatever we're feeling, we do. Tonight,
I want to make it clear that I was not the love letter to Bungie. I know I'm the guy who plays Destiny these days.
Hang on, I have my notes wrong. Sorry.
Yeah, but like the love letter to Bungie was from Johnny, and that was a very pre-Destiny love letter.
Fair. So here's what I need. I am gonna ask for some help from you two.
Okay.
But it's a very low lift.
Do Do I need paper and a pencil?
No, only. I mean, maybe. I don't think so. I'm going to ask each of you to.
Ready. Yeah.
So from 1977 until 2022.
I wasn't alive. Oh, I was alive for that. Okay.
I need you to give me 2 years each.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. This is going to be tough. How about 1980? And then how about 1994? Okay, I did it.
1980. I
need 2 years.
And 1994, Johnny, go ahead.
1988 and 2013.
Okay. I am going to do 1985 and I'm going to do 1998.
Were you born in 1985 or do you just really like Bowling for Soup?
I was born in 85. yeah, both. Trick question. All right, y'all. So thank you for that. And I might throw in a bonus here. Today is August 16th. This is episode 388. No. What is it? What is this one?
338.
Jesus.
July. We're only off by 50.
I'm wishful thinking. July 11th, I bought something and I've been itching to do something with it since I bought it.
I think I know what it is.
And I picked up Video Game of the Year.
Oh, very nice.
By Jordan Minor. And I have
to steal that from you at some point.
It's, well, maybe Santa Claus might have.
Okay.
Okay. Something for you. This is one of the coolest books I have been able to thumb through in some time. There is just a really beautiful illustration and story. And for anybody who doesn't know what it is, this is a year-by-year guide to the best, boldest, and most bizarre games from every year since 1977. And so we are going to use the years that you gave. We're going to take a look at the game that they talk about here. And we'll just have a conversation. Did that have an impact on us? Did we see it as a disruption? Did that influence any of the other games that we end up talking about tonight? What do you recall? Was there anything that stood out to you about this game that maybe was an obscure thing that's kind of floated around your brain? We didn't know each other for most of these years that we've listed out here. So I think it'll be cool, like other things from yesteryear that we've talked about, to kind of see the time and place we were at when we experienced it and what that looked like. So buckle up. Oh,
sorry, what was the author's name again?
Jordan Minor.
Jordan Minor.
Yeah.
He was recently on a remap. It's not Waypoint anymore. The Remap podcast. And he was talking to Patrick Klepek. I believe Patrick has an excerpt in there somewhere.
A lot of people do.
And but one of the other ones they were talking about was Austin Walker, who's got something that I know Austin is really proud of. They have purposefully kind of left that as a, hey, you'll have to buy the book to find out. So I don't know what he wrote about. And we're not going to reveal it here, but I'm absolutely, as soon as we go off air, I'm going to ask Bobby to just send me a screenshot of that of that paragraph, because I want to see what it is and what he talked about.
For sure. There's a lot of contributors to this. Jordan Minor has, so I'll just read this on the back of the book for y'all, is an entertainment and technology journalist. For years, he was senior editor at geek.com, and he is currently an editor on the apps and gaming team at PC Mag. He has also written freelance articles for multiple prominent gaming outlets, including Kotaku, the AV Club, Pace Magazine, 140 Apps, and The Escapist. He lives in New York City. There's a foreword written by one of our friends here, especially for Chase, Dan Reichert. But a lot of other voices have contributed to this book. And Jordan was most recently on one of the podcasts I enjoy, which is Nextlander. And there's a really great interview with him about this as well. I got really excited and I was I knew that this is a popular book, but I was kind of hoping that maybe you two wouldn't find out about it for selfish reasons.
Very close to purchasing it. Myself.
And I listened to that interview as well. It was really good.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to have somebody doing a podcast book tour on our video game websites. Like I feel like book tours on podcasts is very common these days, but not for any of the fucking podcasts I listen to.
No.
So it has been kind of cool that like, oh yeah, somebody's actually doing one of those.
Totally. So I think if it's okay with you two, I would like to go in chronological order from the years that you've provided.
Sure.
And kind of work that way up. So we'll start at 1980. We'll pop over to 85. and then we'll go to 88, and then it looks like 1994, 1998, and then 2013.
Cool.
Awesome. Cool. Well, let's get in here, and I'm going to do my best to, like, there's usually a, the way that they do this, there's, like, an overview page, and then there's some more, like, there's a big art page. So I'll try and read a little bit from one of the main pages, because it's pretty big text, and it doesn't take very long to get through. So okay. we'll do that here. So let me hop over to 1980, and what do you suspect would be the 1980 game in here?
I'm so bad with years.
It's either going to be an arcade game,
okay,
or maybe an Atari game.
What if you had to zip around a maze trying to eat up every last pellet while avoiding a quartet of angry ghosts?
That's very difficult.
That's very, I don't understand. I've never.
Is it Berserk, maybe?
Pac-Man!
Yeah, that makes sense.
So they call it the mascot of the year, and video games, they aren't just Pac-Man anymore. That's the usual
open. It used to be called Puck-Man, but then, yeah.
And Paku. Yes. That's the usual opening you'll hear on The Besties, a superb video game podcast. The tongue-in-cheek intro mocks the hopelessly out-of-touch tone consistently seen in most mainstream gaming coverage, where saying this art form hasn't remained stagnant for the past 40 years, shocking. As fun as it is to dunk on people whose views on video games remain hopelessly locked in 1980, Pac-Man is not the punchline. If anything, the joke only works because Pac-Man is spectacular. Pac-Man and his game hit the culture so hard during such a formative era that at some point you would need to convince people video games aren't just Pac-Man anymore. Pac-Man looms large as not only a beloved game, but the birth of the video game mascot and the first character to give gaming a friendly, hungry face. So, yeah. And then
has everyone here played Pac-Man?
Mm-hmm. We have. The very first thing, which is not going to come across here, is Puck-Man.
Hey,
so, Pac-Man. Yeah, talking about Pac-Man, I mean, obviously, we just did a cultural reference to, I'm assuming you were quoting Scott Pilgrim at that point in time. Or at least going towards
what's the Scott Pilgrim reference?
There's a whole when he first approaches Ramona Flowers, he tries to break the ice by giving and fumbling tremendously a Pac-Man fun fact.
I guess I was just independently as
you're independently cool,
as cool and smart as the author of Scott Pilgrim.
We've also done a segment, I believe it was a deep dive, correct? On the King of Kong, where we've dipped our toe into like the arcade bonanza. That's probably the closest we've gotten to talking at, you know, length about.
Well, we have discussed one Mr. Billy Mitchell, from King of Kong, who did hold the Donkey Kong world record for a while, and then very much did not.
He's the world's greatest video game man.
It's true. He also held. I don't know anymore. Various Pac-Man records. In fact, Johnny, I believe you sent me this guy's YouTube videos, but like the one guy who is just like on a quest to rip Billy Mitchell apart on YouTube. It's so good.
It's fantastic.
So now there's the last video I saw, which was last week, was him tearing into this idea about this plaque that was given to Billy Mitchell, allegedly at the Tokyo Game Show for like I think it was when Pac-Man was being added to Xbox Live or something. I can't remember exactly, but it was something of like, hey, let's present Billy Mitchell with this plaque, except that the news is kind of coming out, or as people are realizing, that Billy made that plaque himself and then had the designer of Pac-Man hand it to him on stage in Tokyo, because the plaque itself is a letter that Namco had sent him, or that this the creator of Pac-Man, I can't remember his name, sorry, had sent him at one point to like congratulate him on a perfect game of Pac-Man or something to that effect. And Billy had that letter like etched into a plaque and then called that the plaque. And then even more insane is that he keeps calling it his video game player of the century plaque, which the letter does not mention anywhere. And then then there were court documents about, hey, we need you to present that plaque. And he goes, oh, no, I lost it. I don't know where that plaque is. Sorry. But then just recently he's like, no, I found the plaque. But it's very clearly a different plaque. Like, you can tell that the size of Pac-Man is different. And and he's like, they gave me two plaques, actually. I never talked about the second plaque. But like, one plaque was just like the one they gave me on stage. And then the second plaque is the one that said video game player of the century. And that's this plaque that no one's ever seen until 2023.
Joseph Smith.
It's so good. I implore people to go check that out.
He's off his rocker.
One of the things like that they do that I appreciate is whenever we bring a game up, they're going to do what's called an extra life at the end of the chapter on it. And they mention one or two other games that had a weighted impact. So I would just ask both of you, like, in 2023, do you feel that Pac-Man has more weight in the bucket than Rogue?
As a stalwart property for video games, as like a mascot for games, as something that people can point to, Pac-Man absolutely takes it.
Yeah, but Rogue. Like, Rogue likes Rogue Light.
I know.
It's its own genre.
I agree. I agree.
So I think it's hard to split those, because they each, I'm not going out and playing Pac-Man likes, but also Pac-Man 128 is still pretty popular, I think.
I don't disagree. And I can tell you that Pac-Man was way more approachable at a younger age whenever I, was coming into video games, and probably a game like Rogue. So I think when I think about molding my approach to video games, like, I know that we had at some point in time a CD-ROM that had a bunch of arcade classics on it, like Dig Dug, Pac-Man and stuff. And I remember playing a lot of it. It's never been one of my favorites, like Donkey Kong. Like, I was probably just a little too young to really get caught up in the arcade frenzy. We've talked about that, but I think as a mascot, like, even recently, Sarah and I built out the Pac-Man arcade cabinet Lego.
He's in Smash Brothers.
There's a very cool, like, write-up about Smash Brothers. Yeah, Rogue's not on Legos either, I'll tell you that much. So Pac-Man, pretty cool game, but I think a little ahead of our time. But definitely we felt and seen it very, very much so.
Yeah. By the way, I'm putting the Billy Mitchell video that I'm talking about into the chat here. Carl Jobst is the author of that video and many other videos talking about how Billy Mitchell either faked his video game playing or is scamming the courts. Lots of great stuff in there. Just amazing stuff.
This brings us to I should probably update what we're talking about here. I'll put 1985 because that's what we've gotten to. Anybody have a thought on what that might be?
Super Mario Brothers.
It is Super Mario Brothers. The Citizen Kane of the Year, as they call it here. Run and jump through side-scrolling levels using Mario's nimble platforming controls to overcome tricky obstacles in your quest to rescue Princess Peach. The next page here. What is the Citizen Kane of video games? Blame Gaming's ongoing pursuit of prestige and desire to be treated like real art for the greatest and dumbest argument among people who think about this hobby for a living. In the world of cinema, Orson Welles' 1941 masterpiece sits on a lofty perch, not only because it's undeniable quality, but because of what it did for filmmaking as a whole. Citizen Kane expanded the artistic possibilities of what a movie could be. Calling it the greatest movie of all time is maybe a safe, almost cliche answer now, but think about how amazing something has to be that decades later folks are tired of saying how amazing it is. What has gaming offered that even approaches this level of quality and importance within its own medium? The gamer hive mind has debated the issue for years, sometimes proposing that video games don't even have a Citizen Kane equivalent yet, and we need to work harder until the mythical game comes to pass. I disagree. I felt extremely confident about my personal answer to gaming's Kane conundrum for quite some time now. What's the Citizen Kane's of video games? Easy. It's Super Mario Bros. And while I think there's probably some good cool truth art to that. That's very cool art.
Man, that's I hate the Citizen Kane of games argument because
of course,
like it also just makes the Citizen Kane that I think people are reducing it to just like what's like the really good game.
Sure.
And I just don't think that's what the Citizen Kane thing is about. Like it's about technology. It's a little bit about technology, but like the history of what Citizen Kane was and what it meant for Orson Welles' career and how it kind of fucked over Orson Welles' career because it got made in the first place.
Well, I mean, ironically enough, Orson Welles died in 1985 also.
There you go.
No, he didn't.
Mario
did
killed
he?
Him.
I don't know.
Did he?
I don't know. You're the one who brought it up.
I think he did.
It's just it's a very weird fraud thing. Also, yeah. if we're talking about like actual comparisons to movies, all video game stories are bad. There has
sure. I think that this is very deserved of Game of the Year. I cannot sure. think of a more monumental game for me personally. That's not my favorite Mario game by a long stretch. But it's the game that has made this, what's happening right this very second, a thing. Like, Mario is what hooked me. And so I'll always be appreciative of that. But I think that Mario, to me personally, is the definitive mascot of gaming across all. Like, I think he is the Mickey Mouse equivalent of recognizable household name. And even more so this year.
It established so many things about games, which again is why I think the Citizen Kane thing is a little weird, because Citizen Kane, I feel like, did a bunch of weird stuff that some people kind of try to attempt, but a lot of people don't. Like, that movie is still a pretty unique, weird thing.
Fuck Orson Welles. They can say he's the Chris Pratt now.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that's the remake we need. We need Citizen Kane. Chris Pratt.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Rosebud.
But yeah, like Super Mario Brothers has so many things that has led to the language of video games.
100%.
From just little things. Like, we talked a little bit of a while ago about the new Disney game, the Mickey game, where the developer had taken out the ability to like get a higher bounce when you land just on the enemy and then you jump off them, because that's not something that little kids today think about, because they don't have that same language of video games like we do, because that's what was in Super Mario Brothers. So we have that feeling of, oh, we're hitting that spring, well, we have to hit the jump button at just the right time off that spring to get the highest jump out of that. Or the way you could run over the like the one unit's gaps in the ground, the secret areas, the one-up mushrooms, the hidden blocks. Like, a lot of these things I think have led to this kind of vocabulary for video games that just wouldn't have been there, or at least wouldn't have been as popularized.
Totally.
If it wasn't for something like Super Mario Brothers.
I mean, this, I've got a lot of Mario stuff all around me here in this room. Like, it's very important. I think that's a pretty gimme, though. So let's hop over to a few years ahead of that, to 1988.
What was the bonus game?
I'm sorry. It's the Oregon Trail.
Hey, that's a good game.
That's a good game.
Yeah, that's a great game. I think that's a very fair, like, cultural moment. Like, people still talk about, you don't want to get dysentery, you know? Like,
you can buy a shirt at Target that says you died of dysentery. Sure. So it's very much still.
I was always more of a scurvy guy, but yeah, dysentery works.
That's the dirty dog. All right, we have made our way to 1988, a sequel, no less.
Could it be Super Mario Brothers 3?
No.
88. I'm just so bad with years.
Johnny, ding, 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 you get Mega Man 2 as the game of the year. That's a good game. Run and jump through imaginative mechanical levels and square off against the deadly robot masters to gain their signature weapons. Going on, Replayability, the ability to replay a game again and still have a great time, is highly valued in video games. After you watch a movie, read a book, or listen to a song once, you'll always know exactly how it goes. But your second, sixth, or hundredth playthrough of a video game can be unique experiences, even if only slightly. It's like theater. If you love a game, though eventually you'll want something new, you'll want a sequel. Like any sequels, video game sequels must walk the fine line between giving the audience what they already like and introducing them to fresher and hopefully better ideas. Video games have an especially wide variety of options for threading this needle, since the question of what defines a game has so many different and fascinating potential answers. What can change? What has to stay the same? Will fans accept a whole new game? Should we ditch the main character? Can we just stick to the formula? There's no one-size-fits-all solution. Creators making a game sequel have to decide what's right for their game and their franchise. If you're looking for a sturdy sequel template, the ideal follow-up, look no further than Mega Man 2. And there's some, again, very cool artwork for Mega Man.
Oh, man. I played through Mega Man 1 and 2 on my 3DS several years ago.
Sounds like half of a good time.
It was, you know, it was all right.
Mega Man 1 Mega Man 1 has all the iconic robot masters for sure, like Gutsman and Cutman and that kind
of stuff. But it's also kind of fucked. That game.
Yeah, that game's just not very fun.
It's extremely difficult. I'll take it. I like Mega Man.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my approach to it as well. Like I never really played Metroid either because they were just hard games. They seemed like, I mean, I was a young child, like that was something that was not obtainable at the time for me, but my cousins who were older definitely played that stuff, and I always felt super intimidated by it when I saw it. But yeah, I appreciate it being on here. It's not my cup of tea.
I still wasn't born yet, but
yeah, Chase wasn't even around. Didn't even want to be around anymore.
I mean, I played two's good. I think I prefer 2 to 3. I know that's the argument with most people, is 2 versus 3. I'm not a Mega Man guy. I think I like the aesthetics of Mega Man more than I totally. Like
sound, especially playing. Music, looks, all that stuff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and say it from a cultural impact level for the year 1988 and where we're at today. The runner up was John Madden Football. And I would say that that's maybe the, I don't know if that's the definitive John Madden Football that we would say kind of got it.
They still make Madden Football games. They don't make Mega Man games anymore. So obviously one's lasted a little bit longer.
Yep, that's true.
Mega Man 11 came out like
4 years ago. Other people are making Mega Man style games, but
yeah, 30X sure just came out.
Yeah.
This is a bit serendipitous, I'll say, getting into 1994. Chase.
94.
I can tell you one of us is a big fan of this.
Okay.
One of us has put a lot of time into thinking about this.
Well, that does not narrow it down.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
Somebody's going to fight over this.
Street Fighter 2?
Oh. Okay.
Ta-da! Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Turbo, yeah.
Street Fighter 2 Turbo, the next round of the year. Pick a fighter and use their unique blend of offensive, defensive, and special moves to defeat your opponent before they defeat you in this turbocharged update featuring bonus characters, new moves, and faster speed options.
Johnny, can you name the Turbo-only characters from Street Fighter 2?
No, I can't.
I don't think I can either, but
I never played. Four was where I get in on the series.
I'm pretty sure that T-Hawk is one of them.
Okay. T-Hawk?
Is Akuma one of them? Could you not play as Akuma maybe in
Akuma Matata?
Cammy maybe?
I know for a fact you had Ryu, and I know for a fact you had
yes. I think Ken and Ryu and Chun-Li are probably Chun-Li, safe bet.
Yeah.
I think Blanca was in Vanilla Street Fighter 2. Mm-hmm. Is it like Sagat maybe? Oh, DJ, that's a good answer. Yeah, DJ.
Vega.
Are you guessing or are you?
I'm on the wiki. I'm on the wiki.
Okay.
Fei Long, Balrog, my boy Zangief.
Zangief was a turbo. Oh wow, I thought he was a vanilla. So I was even wrong on T-Hawk. T-Hawk's the one I thought was like a gimme.
T-Hawk is there.
Okay, cool.
They go on to say, gamers from communities and some games are entire communities into themselves. For a genre all about beating your opponent senseless, nothing brings people together like fighting games. Invite aspiring world warriors to your arcade tournament and watch them tear each other apart out of love. For the competition to stay compelling, it needs to evolve and change and keep pace as players get better and smarter. The game needs to be just as alive as its most dedicated fans. Street Fighter II could have rested on its laurels, content in the knowledge that it created a fighting game genre we know. Instead, like dedicated athletes, it kept training, kept growing stronger, and kept surpassing every challenge. Super Street Fighter II Turbo is the next step on the journey. A follow-up that year, or a runner-up, I should say, was Super Metroid's captive audience. So I think that Street Fighter II had more staying power than Super Metroid.
Maybe.
You'll have some very upset Metroid.
Yeah, I mean, we are just coming off an Evo, so, but I think there are a lot of developers. Maybe not a lot of Japanese developers, but I think there are a lot of developers who were extremely inspired, not just by Metroid, but specifically by Super Metroid.
Yeah, the things it's a big one. I know that. Yeah. I know it's a big one.
It's a big one for us. Like, again, Japan doesn't really seem to care as much about Metroid, even though they make the thing. But
totally. I know that Johnny, I was giving him a hard time at the beginning of this, but he has fallen victim to the street fighting, and it's probably going to be a game that he talks a lot about this year.
Do you want the latest Street Fighter 6 hour count?
I do not.
Yeah.
175, just about.
Fucking gross. Just gross.
Yeah.
Fucking disgusting.
I watched the rest of the things that I cared about at Evo.
Nice,
that was fun.
You did?
The Soul Calibur one was weirdly interesting.
How old is that game that
they're playing?
Soul Calibur 6.
6 came out what, 2019?
Something like it's got Geralt in it. So,
oh, I remember that.
I think maybe the Geralt character won. I can't remember. I just remember being bored of seeing Geralt. Like, oh, I'm here for like the cool Soul Calibur people, and it was just the two swords man again.
Oops, all sure. Geralts.
Oops, yeah, all Geralts. We're gonna do another incremental bump up here. 4 years from 94 to 1998. Anybody want to take a stab?
Oh man, I don't know, Bobby. I mean, I know what the obvious pick is, but I know some of these. Is it Ocarina?
It is not.
No, is it Half-Life?
It is not.
And Half-Life was 97, right?
Let me check the book.
Is it the Pokemans?
It is not.
Okay. I think Red and Blue are 98. Was it 98 for Japan? And
Half-Life was 98.
Okay.
Sneak around the shadow. Moses Island compound, a special agent.
Oh, Metal Gear Solid. Yeah.
Yep, Metal Gear Solid was the 1998 game. Let me give you the artwork here. Very good. Very good.
Yeah, we're giving it away.
Giving it away.
Yeah.
Let me read this to you all here.
Incredible, incredible game.
Gaming's jump to 3D graphics, a massive move toward visual realism, reignited the medium's desire to be seen and respected as a mature storytelling art form to rival films. Auteur theory, a popular critical lens through to which to view films as art, analyze works as the unique visions of singular artists and the partners they frequently choose to collaborate with. You trace
the Citizen Kane of video games.
It is. This is a Strand game. You trace their common themes, motifs, and obsessions. When you watch a Wes Anderson or a Spike Lee movie, you know to expect symmetrical compositions on a dolly shot. While some dedicated individual developers have created indie games all by themselves, video games like movies are typically group efforts. Plenty of talented people worked on Metal Gear Solid and deserve credit. But when you experience this work of stealth game art from writer, producer, director Kojima, whether playing it or just watching, you know precisely who authored it. No well, other video game auteur leaves a stamp this proud and obvious.
Let me ask this to the crowd. If a Wes Anderson movie is about symmetry, what is a Hideo Kojima game about? Like, what are the hallmarks of Kojima?
Surrealism, for sure.
The guy that always shits himself.
There you go. Uh-huh, sure.
Yeah. His name is Johnny something.
Johnny Sasaki, yeah.
Johnny Sasaki.
Similar to our Johnny, who just shits the bed.
I mean, there's always, you know, themes of, like, war and, you know,
sure,
nuclear disarmament. It's, you know, there are themes that carry throughout Metal Gear.
Some weirdly horny shit.
Mm-hmm. Very horny shit.
Yeah.
Some I already mentioned Johnny culture. Sasaki.
True. Scatman.
I appreciate this game. I think it probably deserves what we're talking about. It's not even we've listed a lot of games for 98 that are all incredible, and that's not like none of them are the runner up to sure. this. StarCraft was.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, okay. that's yeah. personal preference, but
StarCraft was massive. So,
yeah,
I know what my favorite game from 1998 Pokemon
was pretty massive, but
yeah, that's
I don't know.
I mean, I
get why somebody says StarCraft there. And I think I feel like 98 is one of the ones he's talked about on some of the book tours that he's been on where somebody's like, how do you choose when you have so many good ones, so many options? He's like, sometimes you have to make a hard decision or like what is. You know, not necessarily the best game, but what is the most interesting angle I can take? And I think, you know, StarCraft, you could probably get an interesting angle on that. What's got you chuckly?
What we're about to do for 2013, I think, is going to be really fun. Take a guess.
Tokyo Mirage Session Sharp FE.
That was in 2013.
No, I think that was
it's 2016, 2015.
I'm trying to see that was the I was very tired all throughout 2013.
Hey, stay on that. You're really close to it. You're really close to what the game was.
By saying I was really tired?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm drawing a blank.
Depression Quest.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Depression Quest, yep. an interactive nonfiction about living with depression. The Firestorm Game of the Year simulate the everyday struggles of life with mental illness and this text adventure based on personal experiences. The indie game boom elevated marginalized creators, and we're all better off for it. Finally, more artists freely made games that reflected their own personal and political identities. Gaming became a broader tapestry, of perspectives than white guy with a gun. Gaming became a place that allowed for excellent emotional experiences like Depression Quest. Unfortunately, Depression Quest's significance is unfairly, inescapably linked to the fact that it has also inadvertently caused a chaotic controversy, Gamergate, that revealed the darkest realities of video game culture itself. As some championed new voices, others attempted to shout them down. And I think when we talk about like an impact on that, like that certainly is something that we are still feeling today. 100% still feeling today. The reason I was chuckling, Chase, is the runner up was Fire Emblem Awakening. And that's what had me laughing because of course that's going to be a game that you say has a cultural impact.
I mean, it saved that franchise. That was was going to be the last one, and they threw basically every other mechanic from previous games into one, and they're like, well, let's go out with a bang, and then it banged. All right, and now we're in this.
But really, Super Smash Brothers, say Fire Emblem.
I,
save or birthed, more or less, because yeah, like that was those were Japanese only games until until somebody went, who the fuck is Marth?
Who's Roy? What the fuck is Roy?
What's a Roy?
I mean, we were,
and you know, the same thing happened with Lucas. Like the, you remember they brought out another three right after that, and
yeah, I didn't know. Great
time.
It's like, who's Lucas, and why does he have all of Ness's powers?
I gotta admit, I've never played this game, and I'm trying to think back. You know, like 2013,
Depression Quest or Fire Emblem.
I've played Fire Emblem. I haven't played Depression Quest. I mean, they're kind of one and the same. Free. But
it is free on Steam, though.
Depression Quest is.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
2013, we were wrapping up one generation of gaming, moving into the PS4 and Xbox One territory. And
Destiny.
Destiny would have been 2014, right?
Mm-hmm. I bought it with my PS4.
I
bought the PS4, the white PS4 bundle with a game with Destiny. Oh, hello. Yeah, uh-huh. The eventual game of the year. That's about right. That is...
That makes that is it
about right.
I can handle that.
So yeah, I this is a really fantastic book. It's this one you can pick up, grab, and easily read through. I have not gone through all of it. I've kind of been taking my time with it, and like I'll grab it off the shelf and take a peek and see what's going on. The one thing I'll call out, I don't think it makes it abundantly clear who's contributed. Trying to see, oh, there we go. It's more on the runner up, so that's where you're going to see those contributions at.
Yeah, I think that was the point. Like he wrote the main ones, and then the runner ups were from a contributor who wrote about something that interested them. Which is why those are probably a little bit more personal. In some way. Bobby, I would like you to read one more. Well, not necessarily read. I just want to see one more year. I don't think we need to read through it. We've given people enough free samples already of the book. They can go buy it themselves. But I would like to know my birth year. How about why don't we go on back to 1989?
God, fucking baby.
Yes, 33-year-old baby. That's me.
Yeah, nobody puts baby in 1989. Okay, hang on a second. Hey, this is...
Hey, in a few months, I'll be 34.
The utopia of the year.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is?
No, absolutely not.
SimCity.
Oh, hey. Sure.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
Yeah, SimCity. And then your runner-up. You have River City Ransom.
That's not as good of a game. It has a lot of staying power, but that's not as good of a game.
So let me run down the price here really quick. This is it's being put out by Abrams Image. It's $27.99. I think it's available on Amazon as well. But yes. 1977 to 2022. It's pretty cool to see. For whatever reason, on the back of the book, 2021 is not on here. I don't think I've checked that out yet.
What was you get, anybody remember what our game of the year was in last year?
Last year?
Yeah.
We all play. It would have been one that we've all weighed in on, right? I know I was pushing for Tunic really hard.
I feel like it was something that you guys liked. The runny jumpy one. Names. Why would I remember names of any video game ever?
Hang on, I'm pulling it up here really quick. Day three, top Norco. 10. It was Norco. Tunic, God of War, Ragnarok, Vampire Survivors, Elden Ring, Neon White, Pokemon Legends, Arceus, Hardship, Space Breaker, Tiny Ken, and Call of Duty, Modern Warfare 2.
What did they have as 2022's game of the year?
Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe.
Oh, that's
kind of cheap
one.
But
a little cheaty.
Yeah,
considering cheaty. That
I wonder games, what year was that originally? 2012, right?
Was it 10 full years?
I think it was. Is that the achievement, joke? Right?
Because there was the achievement where you don't play it for 10 years and then
2012 would have been The Walking Dead of Playtell fame.
Okay.
I got the all the ones in the back of the book. If you want to know another one, I can call it out here. But
no, we're good. Again, we've given away enough of the book, but that's cool.
I thought this was fun. Yeah. Some surprises, I think, for us. Some good reflection on what was going on. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on this week outside of talking at nauseam about
what's going on this week.
A lot. Let me get our credits pulled up here. Hang on. Credits are incoming now, as well as a link in chat. So this week's different, and the next few weeks are going to be even more different, but we've got some fun stuff. Chase and I went back to Mario and Rabbids DLC, and while we did not get to see the new character, that game still remains to be very cool, and I had a hell of a time going back to it. I had so much fun doing that. That was a really good time checking that out. We put a quick look up for, speaking of video games of the year, Venba, one that we are very excited about and high on. That quick look is up wherever you are subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Go over there right now, youtube.com/casualhour. Tonight we had episode 338. You just experienced a deep dive. And hold the phone. If you are a live listener, you will get to see a live recording well before it hits the audio only version. Tomorrow, Thursday, August 17th, we will be putting up a quick look for Thronefall, which is not a quick look back. I realize my naming convention is way off here.
Yeah.
And we also will be doing episode 339.
It's quick look forward. Isn't that an early access?
Yes. Quick look forward. And then Friday night, Johnny is going to be out. So we have friend of the show, Jiggy, coming by to play some Risk of Rain 2 with Chase and myself. Then next week, we will not be live during the week. We will have the audio version of this podcast that goes up on Friday, and we will have the audio version of tomorrow's podcast that goes up next week. We'll have some quick looks, but we will not be live all of next week, and the following week we will not be live for our podcast or Casual Mondays, but we'll be back on Casual Fridays with Jiggy again for more Risk of Rain 2. So we're going to be getting some stuff out there. YouTube will be a great place to hang out. Chase is going to talk here in a second about some other things that you can dip your toe into while trying to fill the gap of our weekly broadcasting. But that's what we've got going on. Chase, why don't you tell the kind folks out there what you got going on?
It's not a lot, unfortunately. You can go back and read my my article on Gunpoint, which was my backlog roulette game for the month of July. That's up there on gamersonthego.com. You can read all about that there and why, you know, it's a game that took me 10 years to play, and how it was completely worth it. Nice. And then we'll talk tomorrow about how the backlog roulette's going for this month.
I can't wait. I cannot wait.
And then I have another podcast. It's called Pilot Program. We're on a hiatus right now as the writers and screen actors are still striking against the studios.
Oh, yeah.
We are in solidarity. We're not doing our television podcast, so we don't talk about any struck work. But you could go back and listen to previous episodes that are up right now. You can go to shows.acast.com/pilotprogram and listen to us talk about things like Sailor Moon or The Bear. Lots of good stuff there. And that's about it.
Nice. Hey, thank you for letting me take you two through this book. Go buy the book. It's cool. It's very good. Go buy and support this book. Good stuff happening there. And we'll be back live tomorrow with episode 339. We'll talk to you all then. Cool. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.